I wouldn't say that GTC is big at all, even in within its own space. You know, it's a very niche world that I live in, and it's a very competitive world.
What was your inspiration to want to join the Royal Marines? And why the Royal Marines? Why not the infantry, the Remy, anyone else?
That's the large reason why there's a disproportionate between, like, military that take their own lives or services that take their own lives versus civilians, because they can adapt, they can figure out a way of doing it, and they'll carry it through. There's a larger proportion of people that do that in the services than on the outside.
Guys, welcome back to the Combat Fuel podcast. Today, we are joined by former Royal Marine Commando, owner of GTC, and a questionable human being because he drinks Dr. Pepper. And he says it's better than Pepsi Max. PJ, thank you for your service. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank
Please
you,
introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, so... I'm PJ. I served in the Royal Marines. Then I went into the fire service and now run GTC, which practically means that I just sell short shorts on the internet. So it's not that exciting, but it keeps me busy. Yeah, pretty
nice.
Lucky.
Nice. And, you know, GTC's done pretty well with your... And you call them silkies or skillies?
Silkies. Yeah, silkies. Yeah. So silkies is probably our sort of... What we're known for, what Jabal Training Company is known for, is those silkies. But depending on who you talk to, we've got a couple of products that are like quite close behind that. Like the flannel shirts are probably the next one that people are like, oh yeah, if they don't know us for the silkies, they know us for that. And then sort of everything else comes really below that, to be honest. But yeah, they're silkies. And they're not an original product. They are an improvement on an existing product with our sort of spin on it. Really?
Absolutely. I mean, well, look at us. We didn't invent supplements. We just do it incredibly well. And you know, I think it's one of the first things I bought off you was with my short shorts that I use for struggle cuddling other men, which are apparently questionable because they're small. But let's start off like where we came from. Your mum, I imagine. Where did you grow up and where was like your childhood?
Yeah. So I did come from my mum, which is a good start.
Although you do look like you may have come from a test tube.
Yeah, either a test tube or just like Shrek or something. But yeah, so I was born in Essex and grew up mainly around Essex. I did, my parents sort of split up when I was probably 9, 10-ish. And then we moved over to Wales. We lived there for a few years. Then we came back to the same sort of area in Essex, in and around sort of Southend, Rochford area. And that's where I sort of finished growing up, and then at 18 joined the Marines. So it was pretty sort of moved around a little bit, but basically Essex and Wales.
How was, you know, it's very common, isn't it, for lads to and lasses to join the military that come from, and dare I say it with no disrespect, but from a broken home, mum and dad have split up. Was that any motivating factor for you? You know, like, I want to join, and how did it affect your childhood, like mum and dad not being together?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always a positive or a correlation between the amount of people in the forces from those broken homes. And I think probably for a bunch of different reasons, but like, it's one of those things of like, if you don't have a lot of opportunities when you're growing up, the forces are a good one that can give you that if you're not like, if you don't have other opportunities being presented to you. But for me, it was more just, I think I was always wanting to go into the forces somewhere. And the fact that my parents sort of split up wasn't really a factor. I don't think it really affected me in terms of a negative way. We sort of didn't really see my dad as often, but we still had a pretty good relationship with him. It wasn't
good
between like us kids and him. It wasn't overly toxic or anything. You know, there was times where we'd see him a little bit more, times we'd see him a little bit less, but it was all relatively, sort of amicable from our standpoint. And, you know, we went away and had trips and stuff with him. My mum's the real rock star. Like she raised, like, cause we had, there was four of us until my brother passed away, which we will touch on when we get there. And then my mum ended up finding a partner who also had four kids as well. So there was like at certain points, eight of us in one house. And my mum pretty much raised us bar some of the older ones, like why she was also working full-time all by herself. So she was the real rock star. She had no sort of real connection to the forces. So I don't think it really negatively affected me. And I don't think it sort of influenced me going into the forces. I was always probably going to go that route anyway.
I mean, 8 kids under one roof is savage.
Yeah, it was some pretty crazy times, especially when we went to Wales, because that was when the time where we're all sort of in together. But my 2 older stepbrothers were sort of coming and going at that time anyway, so it wasn't sort of, it was 6 to 8 most of the time. But yeah, it was a busy time.
I bet. And you said, unfortunately, your brother passed away.
Yeah, that was only relatively recently. So my younger brother passed away. He was at uni in Plymouth at the time. And that was, would have been 2022, 2023 time. And that's sort of what triggered me really to take some leave from the fire service to then, when I returned from that, go full time with GTC. So we'll sort of be working back into that again in a minute anyway, probably, no doubt. Of course.
What was your inspiration to want to join the Royal Marines? And why the Royal Marines? Why not the infantry, the REMI, anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, one, because, you know, I'm not a hat, so.
No, so that was, I mean, such poison as well.
Yeah, I know. I tried to and then just had to crack up. No, it was, so I actually, when I was quite young, so I always wanted to be a pilot. So it's probably the only thing that I wanted to be when I was a kid that I could think of, from, you know, my early ages to sort of 12, 13-ish. It was all pilot. And I joined the Air Cadets. I was there and that sort of thing. And it was sort of, as I was going through sort of discovering and being a real human at sort of 12, 13, 14, 15, I realized a few things. One, my eyesight wasn't great. 2, I'm borderline retarded. And 3, I don't really look that good in blue. So it was sort of the combination of 3. I was like, oh, maybe it's not really for me. So I started looking more into the sort of greener side of it and more military soldiering, traditional soldiering, rather than pilot sort of route. And one of my earliest memories was going to my second cousin's wedding. And he went in the Marines as like a normal bod, corps commissioned. Then he came out as a major, ended up setting up a really successful consultancy firm based out in America. And I've actually done work for him with the hostile environment stuff years later. So one of my earliest memories was going to his wedding. And he had like a honor guard of all the other Royal Marine officers and stuff standing outside. And that sort of always stuck in my mind a little bit. So when it was sort of like deciding against the pilot route and going more green skills, there was, like, coming from an air cadet area, people were talking about the RAF Reg. So glad I didn't get sucked into that. And ended up just sort of going, well, you know, I remember Mike, his name was a Royal Marine. Maybe I'll look at that.
So that was that what made you branch off? Because that olive tree there, you could have gone RAF. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, they're good lads. They've got a stereotype with a 5 mile of death, but they're actually not bad lads. You know,
they're
great lads. Yeah. But so because of this guy, Mike, that's why you went Royal Marines rather than RAF Reg.
Yeah, essentially, I think it was one of those things of, especially at that sort of age, I think I was about 14, 15, 16 when I made that sort of conscious decision. And I think it was like, when you're that age, as I'm sure you know, and other people have said, like, you don't really know what you're talking about. You don't know anything really about the military. Unless you've grown up in a military family, you don't really know. You see what you see. You see the adverts, you know, the 99.9% need not apply, what was being blasted on the TV at the time. Commando on the Front Line was out.
Yeah.
Ross Kemp in Afghanistan was out, yeah. You know, and it was essentially... Yeah, it's all that stuff was like all you knew. There wasn't actually anything else you knew. Other than that, it was the cheesy brochures and any other adverts on the TV. You know, social media wasn't a thing. There wasn't quote-unquote military sort of personalities. There wasn't tags around telling you little bits and bobs. There wasn't any civvy to commando courses to go on.
No.
There wasn't Mike Chadwick doing it from the para thing. There was none of that. So it was just sort of, you didn't really know anything. And it was just connecting the dots of like knowing Mike and knowing that it looked pretty cool. Oh yeah, I'll give that a go. Yeah.
And I love that. I'll give that a go.
Yeah.
Like, arguably like one of the hardest basic trainings in the world. I'll give that a go.
Well, I think, like I said, like maybe it's more just me not being very smart. I don't think I realised what it was until I'd already set my mind on it.
How old were you when you applied to join?
So I would have been, well, actually I applied to join, or I first went to the careers office at like 15 and a half and walked in Chelmsford, the AFCO there. Mm. Doesn't exist anymore. I don't know where, how people recruit now, but it doesn't exist. And I remember walking in, there was this massive geezer, green beret on, and he was sort of like, what do you want? And I was like,
I want to be you.
Yeah, yeah. Can I be you, please? And I was just trying to sort of like find out some information, see if I can sign up. And I remember walking in and he said, what do you want? And I said, oh, I want to join the Marines. And he went, well, there's a pull-up bar there, do 10 pull-ups. And I was like, he was like, 10 pull-ups before you can speak to me. And I was like, oh, okay. So luckily I managed to do 10 pull-ups and had a conversation with him. And he essentially turned around and said, you know, unless you get a signature from your parents, you can't join. You need to be older. So I left there, went back home, tried to sign up. And essentially my parents, my mum was like, I'm not signing until you do at least A-levels. You know, maybe you don't want to do that, blah, blah, blah. So I thought I was being smart. So I went to my dad, obviously they'd been separated, and he essentially went, I don't have a problem with it, but I'm not going to take the wrath of your mum. So if she's not signing it, I'm not signing it.
Yeah.
So I tried to play both sides, but that failed. And, you know, it was one of those things where if I wanted to press it, I think I probably could have pressed it with her, you know, expressed how much I wanted to do it, and she probably would have ended up signing it. But I didn't really press it that hard, and then ended up sort of just going and doing my A-levels and relatively chilling out with it. But then as soon as I was 18, I signed up then. So I started training at like 18 in a couple of months and had like 19th birthday in training. So
yeah. Nice. Love it. Any regrets?
No, not at all. I think it was one of those things of like, I obviously tried to join a little bit earlier. Sometimes I maybe would have thought, oh, if I'd joined earlier, I would have got an Afghan. And it's sort of like, I've never been naive enough to say, I'd wish I'd gone. We all know people that either did go, came back different, or did go and never came back, both mentally and physically. So it's like, I'd never been naive enough to sit here and say, I'd wish I'd gone. But I will admit, there's that wish I had the opportunity to test myself in the role that I prepared for type thing. So I wouldn't say there was a regret at all, but there was a possibly a missed opportunity with timings. But it all worked out how it worked out in the end, really.
Good stuff. Mm. And you know, it's pretty young to join the Corps. A lot of guys that join, and the pass rate or the attrition rate is relatively low, isn't it? You know? And any of the Royal Marines we've had on before, were you an original?
No, I wasn't, no.
So it's the first one we've had, and you know, there's no disrespect in that at all, you know, but it just shows that you still passed out as a Royal Marines mm-hmm. commando, you know, there's no shame in it. What happened? How come you didn't pass out as an original?
Yeah, it's one of those things with the original thing, like it's definitely something that should be celebrated, you know, it is an achievement. It's mainly, if you do it, from a you never got injured point of view, it kind of is a bit different to a professional failure in the terms of like how much it means to an individual. So it is a good thing. Well done to anyone that does pass out an original. But obviously the ultimate goal is the ultimate goal, I guess, for most people. But yeah. So my personal experience is I got to week, I think it was like 26, might have been 24. I was on fogging tour and literally I rolled my ankle and that was it. We're doing a water crossing on fogging tour, which is like it's on Dartmoor, and it's essentially like your first introduction to ML type stuff, mountain leader stuff. And you do a bunch of caving ladder ascensions, you do some river crossings, you do a lot of getting beasted. And it was literally, we finished a serial and it was like, right, go over there to get ready for a river crossing, get changed. So you essentially strip down, all you have on is your Gary Gore-Tex bottom and tops, and you put your silver shadows on instead of your boots. Everything else gets waterproofed in your bag, double waterproofed. And then you sort of run off to where you're starting the river crossing. As I was running, just went over on the ankle. And that was as simple as that, really. But it was really weird. So I only got back to, so I started training with 139 and I passed out with 140. So I only got back to one troop where they were in 2 week intervals at the time. And it was very strange because I rolled my ankle. I was in hospital for about 2 or 3 days because the swelling was so large and the bruising was so large, they couldn't x-ray it.
Yeah.
So they weren't sure whether it was broken or whether it was just a weak ankle, as it turned out to be, twisted sock. So I was in hospital for a couple of days. Then I was on the ward, a sick bay, for a couple more days, pretty much that first full week. And then it got to sort of Thursday, Friday, and they were like, spoke to a physio, and I could just about do enough mobility. They were like, oh, okay, you can go to hunter troop now. So go and report to hunter troop. So I had to go back to my old troop, tell them that I'm going to hunter. They said, okay, bye. fill up one of those like cages with all your kit, wheel it over to hunter troop, and I reported there. So I walked in and the sergeant was sitting there. I don't know if it's usually as a sergeant or how it's meant to work, but there was a sergeant sitting there and he was essentially, what do you want? So I reported, you know, and I said, oh, I've just come out of sick bay. I've been told to come here. And essentially just went, well, I'm covering. What are you doing? I was like, well, I don't know. I've been told to come here. You know, well, why were you in sick bay? I was like, well, I rolled my ankle and fogging tour. It was like, all right, what do I do with you? And I was like, well, I guess I'm waiting for the next troop so I can join the troop behind me. So I can, you know, carry on or start where I left off. And he was like, well, you have to redo 4 weeks. You'd have to go back on the Monday, which is actually I think it was a 9 mile speed march on the Monday.
Yeah.
And then the Tuesday's fogging tour, or it was back then. So I was like, okay, yeah, I think I'm waiting for that. He was like, all right, no worries. So at the time there was it was like Charlie and Delta. And it was sort of like Charlie was get yourself physically back to where you need to be. And then Delta was catch up professionally so that you can go straight into whatever troop you're joining.
Yeah.
And he was like, go straight to Delta, go to this room, you're staying there. So I got there and like speaking to all the other nods that were in there, they were like, yeah, no, you won't be joining the next troop. It's just not how it works. Like you've got one more day. I think it was on the Friday or something. It was like next Friday is when everyone like gets moved around to their new troops. And he was like, that's not how it works. You need to do this test and this test to get out of Delta and then you get issued a troop. And I was like, oh, well, just what I've been told, you know? So I literally did a week of like just that sort of routine, little bit of fizz, like fizz twice a day, back to the grot, mainly chilling out from what I remember, rolled around to the Friday and literally all parade outside. It's quite funny because people are in different stages of biff. People are standing there in like boots and broken legs and on their crutches and stuff. And they were like, oh yeah, so-and-so, you know, recruit Smudger, you're going to there, you're going there. And they just went, recruit Harry's, yep, you're going to 140, they're in this block, fin out. And I was like, oh, sweet. So I don't know how it's meant to work in Hunter, but I don't think it's meant to work how it did for me.
No. And if anyone does get like back trooped to Hunter, it's not like you're a failure, you're shit, anything like that. It's just, you've physically been injured or you need a little bit more because we want the end product and the end product has to be good. There's no, it was 90% there. Give him a green berry. It's not how it works, is it?
No.
So there's no shame in it. There's nothing bad. It's just, you need a little bit more. You know, we need to give you a little bit more education or a little bit of time to recover and then you're allowed to carry on. And it's, you know, so the first guy I've had in there and, you know, except for Royal Marine, everyone that earns their green lid is, and it's, thank you for explaining. Really good.
But yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's where it's like, not everyone's going to be great at everything first time round. So professionally, you might fail something. You just need another little retest and you'll be fine. And injuries, they're injuries.
Yeah.
You're doing something like that, you're going to need to
You touched a little bit after and it will come to, but you know, saying you'd missed it for the time you joined Operation Herrick. Had so obviously 9/11 had happened, we're around late 2012 you joined?
Yeah, January 2012 is so when I started training, yeah.
But was there any like, again, you got the Union Jack, Union flag on your chest. Were you patriotic? Was there a sense of like pride, like I want to go and fight for our country. I can see the boys that are doing this. I've seen the content that's been coming out with Ross Kemp, commander on the front line. I want to go and fight for our country. Or was it just, it's a job, looks cool. Could be mate, Mike did it and I went to his wedding.
I think it was a bit of a mixture. I think my old man was in the Met for 31 years. So he'd always sort of served in the police. His dad was career army. My second cousin, as I spoke about, he was in the Marines. His dad left as a colonel in the army. So there was always like, especially that side. And then my grandparents on both sides fought in World War II and all that sort of thing. So there was always that underlying want to represent the country type thing. But I think it was more when I got into training and everything was geared towards Afghan, all the dits you were hearing, all of the stuff on TV, all of the lessons being taught by the section commanders and the corporals were all real life lessons that they had done 6 months, year, three, yeah, year, 4 years before, Telic, Herrick type lessons. So it was always, I think there was a little bit of patriotism, there was a little bit of pride wanting to go and do it, but I think that was overtaken by the fact of wanting to do what you're being trained to do and do what all those cool stories that people are hearing or that you're hearing and people are telling you. So I think there was definitely that draw to serve, but it was mainly because it looked cool.
Okay. And you know, that's why most of us joined, wasn't it? Like, you know, a generation before us was, I think it was inherently, it was something to do and it was a job to get us out of trouble for a lot. Whereas for a lot of our generation, it was, there's an actual war going on and we can go and experience that. And it, for those that didn't know at the time, like we're like, it looks cool, doesn't it? You know, it, perceptions may differ, but it was a cool thing to see. Who wouldn't want to go and get to experience some of the hardest, harshest war fighting since World War II? And when you started to get that realization that you weren't going to deploy, how did that make you feel? Was that like a, why have I bothered joining?
No, I don't think it was a why. Like, I don't think the regret, or not the regret, but I don't think the missed opportunity of not being able to serve, didn't really, not being able to do that job in an operational environment, didn't really hit me, I don't think, till like years later when I was like looking at career progression and going, we missed that, so what's left? I think towards the end of training, it was still, everyone thought we were all going,
yeah,
on a Herrick. And I was one of the last troops to pass out in DPM. And it was like that transitional period because we passed out in DPM, got to a unit, and you were almost immediately issued your MTP as your hot weather issue because you thought you were going on the next tour. So it was sort of, towards the end of training, I think it was 40 that were going out on the last Herrick, might have been 17, might be wrong. And I'm pretty sure 4-2 had like just got back from 12. If the numbers are wrong, yeah, you know, it was a while ago now, so many a concussion since then. And it was like, it was sort of more of a slow realization that, oh, like, I don't think we're going to get one now. And there was sort of talks of go to 40, you might be on a BCR list, go to 4-2, there's going to be like a collab type 40-42 final Herrick to say goodbye. There was all these sort of rumors floating around. And essentially, I think 40 was like pretty packed because they were getting ready to do the last, what turned out to be their last Herrick, or like the Corps' last Herrick. So I think one, maybe two lads from our troop ended up going to 40. Most of everyone else went to 4-2 because they were like R1. And then they essentially, or we did like the first civvy, not civvy, but like non-operational trips that they hadn't done in ages. So they relived, like Black Alligator came back, which was like an old school, like America trip. Operation Cougar, just a big exercise out in the Middle East, you know, that came back and we were like the first like unit to go and do that stuff. So it wasn't necessarily like I noticed it because the euphoria of getting your green lid straight into the, you're right at the bottom of the pile again, and trying to fit into your unit. And then it was like, oh, we're going to America. We're doing this, we're doing that. So I think the whole missed out on Afghan thing came like a few years later, really.
So how was your time in the Corps overall then? You know, you've come out of training, you're bouncing around, lots of different opportunities. How was the general time you served?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it was, I think early on I probably made like silly mistakes. I think perception from different people was probably different. I suffered a bit with injuries that, you know, I've had operations for since then and stuff like that. So it's like, there was always those ups and downs, but relatively speaking, I had quite a good time. I had quite, like I was there for 4 years, 11 months, like 5 years in the end. And we did STTTs. We did like Cougar, which involved a lot of different exercises. I sort of was in that massive mentality of just volunteer for everything. And that worked out for me. We did America trips, STTTs to Africa, got some really good trips. And overall, it was just a good experience, you know, and it led on and really allowed me to get a lot of experience that towards the end of my career, I could go and do extra things, but only because I'd already done that stuff in the core. So yeah, it was overall, it was pretty good, to be honest.
Good, man. Good. Highlight of your career?
Really hard to narrow it down to a single highlight. I think I had a lot of good times. The STTT, as I say, to one in particular, to Cameroon, was really good because it was me, another Lance Jack, a corporal and a boss. And that was it with the USMC contingent out there. So that was really cool because we're just on our own. And there was elements of Cougar that were really good and elements of Cougar that were like, can I swear?
You can say whatever you want.
Absolutely horseshit. So, yeah, I think it'd be really hard to narrow one down. I mean, I did get gifted a Longines watch by the CG as part of the Cougar sort of package when we got back to camp. So that was really cool. That was definitely got to be like a bit of a highlight. But yeah, that's, you know, there's other times that are a lot more subtle, like having my birthday, bobbing around on a move in Scotland in the middle of the night, you know, on an orc, freezing cold, trying to stay warm. And, you know, the lads singing me happy birthday and then jumping in the oggin and then almost getting hypothermia. That's
banter.
Yeah, banter. That's always like a bit of a good laugh. And they're weird sort of highlights that, you know, at the time you don't really remember. All these years later, you go, oh yeah, that was cool, wasn't it?
Yeah. You live in the moment a lot in the military, don't we? We don't take that time to reflect on like, actually what we do is pretty cool. You know, we get to travel the world, meet new people, the old saying, then kill them. Not necessarily kill them these days. But you know, you get a lot of opportunities to travel. It's pretty cool. The military has a lot to offer, which I suppose can take this onto our next question, which is, why is morale so low in the military overall compared to like when you or I joined like 15 years ago? More, 16. Yeah. We're old, mate.
We are old, mate.
Why is morale so low? And why are the guys and girls suffering and ultimately a lot of people taking their own lives?
Yeah, I think obviously it's either easy or hard. Like we are now outside looking in. You and I both visit a lot of camps. We get to speak to a lot of lads and lasses that are serving now. And we get a very privileged look at it because we got experience and then we're looking back in. Then on the same side, we're not in it anymore. So there's always going to be that weird, our opinions of what the morale is like is always going to be distant. I think the big one is the common goal, just like it is all the time. You know, I remember there being a saying for like training stripies when I was in the forces or when I was in the Marines, and it was always like, nothing builds morale more than a good thrashing. And at the time, you don't get it. It's the worst thing ever. Yeah. But when you get a thrashing, you go back to the grot, everyone has the tunes on, you're cleaning, you're prepping your kit, morale's through the roof again. Yeah. You don't even remember why you were getting thrashed. It's probably a made up reason.
Yeah.
But you have a common goal, you have a common enemy, you have a common drive again. And in peacetime, that disappears. You don't have that anymore. In wartime or even post-wartime, people are still talking about that. You know, I joined towards the tail end of post-war, if you like, but all the stories were still there. Professionalism was at the highest because we didn't know whether we were going to go again. We didn't know whether there was going to be another Herrick. You know, we weren't out of Afghanistan. We only came out of Afghanistan a couple of years ago. So there was always going to possibly be things happening. So lads were always, obviously lads for us because I was in the Corps, but lads and lasses were always directly focused on, it's just happened. This lad had done it. That lad had done it. You know, everyone had done tours, the people you were looking up to. So you wanted to almost impress them. Yeah. Maybe there's not so much of that anymore. You know, they haven't got that common drive. There isn't that war fighter aspect to it. I think the other element would be culture. Culture changes in peacetime. And by that, I mean, as an officer, a rank, anything, to make a name in peacetime, you've got to change something or save money. If you're not saving money and changing something, you're not making a difference. If you're not making a difference, you're not improving your SJR empire, you're not promoting. If you are saving money and changing something, the people at the bottom usually get seen off. So it's like, if you're doing that to try and promote and progress in your career, it's part of the system, you've got to do it. People are going to get more annoyed, morale's going to plummet. Or it could be that not enough people wearing silkies. I would say it's that one.
Definitely. And just to touch, because at the moment it's very prevalent, suicide rates in the military. Mm-hmm. Dare I say it, and not that it implies in any way that it's an easy thing to do, but why is it more common, especially for us to see? Like, if we take per 100 people that have served and per 100 people that are civilians, the percentage is higher mm-hmm. for the military. Any takers to why?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the courage of conviction, you know, and it really does. So it's one, capability, one, isolation, and two, courage and conviction. You know, a lot of people that are, so overall, the most people at risk to take their own lives are essentially young men between the ages of sort of like 22 to 40-ish. They take up the biggest thing. Of those, of the people that have served, probably very high. Then when you look at all of the men and women who are essentially boys and girls that have taken their own lives, that have served or are still serving at the time, that percentage compared to their overall population, also huge. The one thing that sets those people apart is like the same 80-20 split that I like to put on the whole population. And that, by that I mean, is the qualities you get in the forces or the qualities you have that are attracting you to the forces. Some you will earn them, others you have them, that's why you go into the forces, are, you know, courage, punctuality, ability to adapt, a lot of accountability, all those sort of things that are effectively taken for granted. In the military, 80% of people have them. 80% of people are good blokes, good lasses. They turn up on time with the kit they need and they know the job they need to do. Relatively simple. In the civilian world, that's usually about 20%. 20% of people turn up when they need to with what they got and do what they're going to say. 80% don't. That doesn't mean that in the civilian world, you have to be serving to get those things. Just means proportionately, from my experience, what I've seen, it's only about 20%, but it's about 80% in the forces. And it's sort of like, it's that mixture of, are they attracted to the forces that 80% of the people in there are what you would consider good employees, if you like, and then only 20% on the outside are, but, or is it that they had them, that's what's drawn them to those positions? But it's by the by. The point is those people that are that way inclined are more likely to be more decisive, more assertive, have the courage and the convictions, make a decision, get the right kit together, and put it into action. And I think that's the large reason why there's a disproportionate between like military that take their own lives, or services that take their own lives, versus civilians, because they can adapt, they can figure out a way of doing it, and they'll carry it through. And there's a larger proportion of people that do that in the services than on the outside.
Yeah, that's really interesting to put it across like that. I've not heard it come across in that way before, that it's, you know, the conviction of it. I've decided to do something, I can't deal with the thing they may be dealing with. That's my route out. Get it done.
And I think especially for my generation who didn't have that worry aspect, obviously from a generation before mine in the Corps, like your generation and people before you, probably the large reason why they had such a high, and still today have such a high sort of suicide rate or mental health issue rate, is largely to do with PTSD and trauma from those experiences. From my generation onwards, there may be some survivor's guilt type conditions, but I think it's mainly for our guys, it's more like being away from that club, being out of lack of purpose, that kind of thing. Yeah. So I think that's always going to be a contributing factor as well. You know, the external trauma of those and like the mental health issues now are kind of different.
And that said then, why did you leave the Corps? Why did you leave the Brotherhood?
So essentially, I think I ended up going into Landingcraft, mixture of bad decisions and lack of decisions, but I ended up doing that. And I was a Lance Corporal looking at promoting to become a Corporal. And essentially, it looked like I would have to do a 2-year ship draft straight afterwards. And I didn't join the Marines to be on a ship for 2 years. And it was sort of like, tried to explore getting out into a different branch. But essentially, if you didn't want to go PTIs, which if I was fit enough, I didn't really want to do anyway. I had aspirations to go SF when I was like a junior Marine. By the time I'd spent a bit more time, whether I was capable of doing it or not, I'll never know. But it was never really, by the time I done a couple of trips, it just wasn't what I wanted to do. Didn't want to dedicate that much more time to it. Whether I would have passed or not, who knows? And it was sort of like, there isn't really many other branches you can go to and go, I want to do that instead of this one, unless it's one of those big, I need to be released to go and do it. So it was sort of like that. And then after trying to figure that out, talking to my branch Lyra about it, it was essentially, I'm not going to be released because they needed LC2s, LC3s in the branch. So I decided to pack it all in really and leave.
Is that quite a big decision to be like, leave the Corps behind you?
I think it was a big decision, not made in a big way, if that makes sense. Like, I think at the time, you know, that was what, almost 10 years ago now, or about 10 years ago. So I was 23. I don't think any 23-year-old makes big decisions in big ways. Yeah. I think at the time it was sort of like, I'm pretty bored, don't want to do the next step.
Yeah.
Can't figure out any other options. I'll pack it in. I think it's only years later that you realize, oh, that's what you left behind.
Yeah.
But I also think I left at the right time for me. I know a lot of lads, one I was chatting to relatively recently, Pablo, he has just left and he's done some courses, done some cool trips, but we joined at the same time, did our first like 3-4 years, basically side by side until I went to Gucci LCs and he did some like crappy spec, you know, snipes. And it was sort of like up until that point, we sort of mirrored each other in quite a lot of the decisions we were doing. And then I went one way, he went the other. But then he stayed for an extra quite a few years and progressed up the ranks. But we talked very much about what we wanted to do was go and do an operational tour and it never came. I left and have done a bunch of other stuff. He stayed in and chose that route. So it's like when I compare my decisions to him, I'm like quite happy with the way I took mine. So I left at the right time for me.
You got inner peace with yourself from when you left.
Yeah, definitely.
And what did you leave to do?
So I had aspirations to join the fire service, but Essex, where I was living at the time, weren't recruiting. So I used the LCAS points and trained as a personal trainer. So I was doing personal training I got in with Essex Boot Camp in Essex.
Yeah.
Glyn and Jim down there. Yeah,
wicked guys.
Glyn, yeah, yeah, brilliant guys. They gave me an opportunity. So I was working with them for quite a while, ended up getting a franchise with them and doing that route. And then while I was doing that, I was also doing hostile environment courses and some anti-poaching stuff. Awesome. And then as soon as Essex opened up recruiting, which was like the first time in 9 years, I applied for that, slipped through the net, and started that as a whole-time firefighter. So that would have been, I can't remember the exact dates, but a couple of years after I left the forces, a year
ago. How many fires have you put out? Every firefighter never seems to get to do any fires.
Like real good fires? Like none, really. None.
And just to say that, real good fires, like, you know, firemen, fire service, mm-hmm. not like on about like a house burning with children. It's just, you joined and there's a job, right? And yeah. it's rarer than what people think, isn't it?
Yeah, it really how is.
A serious really fire is. Would yeah. be. But again.
I think I went 6 months before I had my first like actual BA wear, which is when you put the like the respirator on and go into a building. And even then it was like, there was nothing in there. It was just to put out a relatively small fire in the kitchen. And it's like, it depends on your perception of it, because there was quite a few lads and lasses that I'd ride on the back of fire engines with that were very excited at every job. Yeah. And you don't know what you're going to, you don't know what's going to be there. If it's persons reported, everyone's a bit more heightened. Yeah. But if it's a house fire, if it's a road traffic, if it's someone trapped, you know, whatever it is, you don't really know what you're going to get to. So I think a lot of people were quite excited. I would literally fall asleep on night shouts in the back of the truck as I'm on the way to shouts. And it's like, I think it's the combination of like, you know, at 18 years old, I went through training. Then at 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, I was fast roping out of helicopters. I was shooting guns. I was driving speedboats.
This is a little bit like, it's just, yeah, it's just.
It, especially after the first couple of blue light runs, it's sort of like you turn up and it's like, oh, someone's had a fender bender. Oh, what are we doing? Nothing, let's go home.
Cat in a tree?
No cats in tree. Oh, cats man. On a roof. There's a cat on a roof.
You're not a real firefighter then, bro.
I'm definitely not a real firefighter, no. Definitely not.
Cats in trees. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, that is the only thing. Yeah. There was a cat in a bush once and we ended up not being able to get it out. So we gave up and just went home. I fed a fox off my boot in Tilbury Docks. That was good. There was some good jobs. You know, it's really hard to say, because like some of the best jobs are the worst jobs to talk about.
Yeah.
But they're the most challenging jobs and they're the most important jobs. They're the ones that you're actually doing the job and people are, you can see the people you're helping.
It's the same as the military do, right? Like, yeah. You know, a lot of guys join to go to Afghan mm-hmm. without understanding like the true extent of what that is. And once it had been experienced by people, especially the guys that did earlier Herricks, it's no, yeah. I knew it.
Yeah. And it's that difference between, you know, some people will look at that and call it warmongering or, you know, wanting bad things to happen. But actually, I think it was Glyn Roberts from Essex Bootcamp who first told me this quote, which was, and I think it was a Royal Marine sniper in Helmand or something like that, and you've probably heard it before, and it, like someone was on the red, a reporter or a journalist asked him the question, you know, like, how does it feel to be here? Or, you know, I think they're rolling into Iraq or Afghanistan or something. It's like, how does it feel to be here? And he said, he equated it to, you know, it's like being a Premiership footballer, spending the whole of my career just on the bench, just training. Now I'm about to play the game. And I think it's the same with the fire service. You know, you want those big jobs that never really come anymore for good reason.
Yeah.
But you still want them because you want to do your job. You want to play in that FA Cup final, in that Premiership final. You know, it's not that you want bad things to happen to people, not at all. It's that you want to be tested for the thing that you've been trained in.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And at this sort of time, it's also where you said, unfortunately, your younger brother has passed and you've had some time mm-hmm. off from the fire service. Go on to that segment. Had GTC already started on the side at this point?
Yeah, so days and dates sort of mold into one, but GTC started in sort of 2020 as an idea. Essentially that some of those injuries that I talked about earlier, I was in the fire service and I needed an ankle operation. And they had to drill it out to see if they can regenerate some cartilage growth. Yeah. Essentially, like throughout the time, I've got weak ankles and the cartilage has degraded. There's bone on bone and it's caused like stress fractures and like missing chips coming off the bones. And so because of that, they were like, well, what we can try and do, I've had like, you know, cortisone injections, right?
Yeah.
Every time I have them, they say, you shouldn't have too many of these in your life.
Yeah.
Right. And I say, how many is too many? And they say, well, we try not to do too many. How many have you had? I've forgotten. It's at least 4 in each ankle. Wow. No idea. And every time they say, ah, we'll do one more. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Anyway. So after all of those, they were like, we'll try and drill it. See if we can regenerate cartilage growth. And it ended up not working. But because of that, I was going to be laid up for a good few months, not doing much. And the missus essentially was like, this was like in between two lockdowns as well during COVID, was just like, come up with an idea and do something. So I just started playing around with some designs. I bought like a refurbished tablet, played around with some designs and started making stickers. And that's when like the first logo was made and established 2020 was made and that sort of thing. But I didn't actually start selling them until 2021. And then, you know, all the years later, it's turned into what it is now. But it sort of overlapped with GTC was like started off then because I couldn't really do anything. Then I was back on the run and I was back in with the fire service. And GTC was sort of growing steadily at that time. We're sort of transitioning then from, we'll probably go into a little bit more detail. But transitioning from like stickers to clothing to yeah. going from Etsy onto WooCommerce, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, I was on a night shift and my younger brother, he was down in uni in Plymouth and I was on a night shift and just got a call. He had been sick. He had just like flu-like symptoms and my mum had spoke to him on the Wednesday. I got a call. I think it was either a Friday or a Sunday. Again, it was the night shift. So I think it was in the summer as well, June or July he passed. And we just finished playing volleyball because it's busy at the fire station. And we were just in cooking dinner and I got a phone call from my mum or my brother, I can't remember which. And I was like, that's weird. Never get a phone call from them while I'm on shift. So I went outside, took the call and they were like, yeah, you know, John's passed away. And obviously it was like, he was 24, 25 at uni, just like passed away. And it was like, what? I spoke to him on Wednesday, 3 days before. He had flu-like symptoms yeah. and that was it. And so that was all a bit weird. The fire service were amazing about it. They, like my boss at the time, station manager was a guy, ex-bootneck as well, called Richie Green. And I literally walked back in. He was like, go home. And I didn't set foot back in a fire station for like 8 weeks. And they just totally looked after me.
Good stuff.
That all took a little bit of a while to come to a head. Went back to work. I say I didn't step up. I did a few shifts in between just because I wanted to be back with the lads.
Yeah.
But a few tours, but I didn't have to come back. Got all that sort of relatively put to bed. And then I was back on the run and I was just sort of like, I just needed a bit of time away. My missus had always wanted to go and move to Australia or
yeah.
go travel. GTC was going quite well. And we were like, oh, like, you know, let's take a career break. So I took a career break then. Went to Australia and New Zealand, traveled around there for about 18 months in the end. Nice. And then by the time I come back, that's when GTC was really started taking off. And January 23, got back and been doing GTC full time ever since.
Awesome. So, you know, look, with our little Cans of Monster, can you come and see this? A little GTC. Absolutely shameless plugs. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing those drinks as well. But let's quickly chat about, completely off topic, but as we had a drink, Dr. Pepper and Pepsi Max.
I mean,
you are wrong. Dr. Pepper is rats. Like, mm-hmm. What kind of like mm-hmm. sociopath thinks that Dr. Pepper could beat Pepsi Max?
Well, just anyone that has taste buds.
Anybody that bangs their head against the wall.
Do you know what? I literally don't care, but I only bring it up every time I see you because I know that you passionately care. I do genuinely prefer Dr. Pepper to Coke to thing, but I don't even drink it that often. This I don't really drink soft drinks very often at all. I actually drink a lot of tonic water because I love gin and tonic.
That's, but that's very posh.
Literally, I am basically middle class. it's literally like my favorite Winston Churchill quote as well, actually, is the gin and tonic has saved more lives, more Englishmen's lives and mind than every doctor in the empire. Wonderful. If that doesn't want make you want to drink a gin and tonic, nothing will. But my point is I don't actually care about the Pepsi versus Dr. Pepper thing. It is a fact that Dr. Pepper is better, but I just like bringing it up every time I see you.
According to who?
It's just cereal nationally recognized no. beverage association.
No, I'd say five, but you're also a blue belt, so.
Not a good one, so I wouldn't worry about it. And at the moment, I've got Biff back. I haven't been on the mats for 3 weeks.
Let's fight about it.
yeah.
You
turn the cameras off. Let's go.
Let's go. Cool. And we're back and I won. Pepsi's better. So you've had a career break. You've traveled to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome time. You've come back. Was there any point where you're like, right, GTC, like this is going to be like my thing. This I'm going to make this big enough to employ me. And I feel like it wasn't. It was sort of like, this is just going to be, it's a thing to do. You got an interest in doing some pretty cool designs.
Yeah, 100%. No, it was never created to be what it is now. I'm incredibly grateful that it is what it is now. And I'm very grateful to be doing this as a job and being able to like bring some people on board now. And we got a HQ up in North Northants and, you know, we go to events and it's amazing. And I'm so, so grateful. And all I want to do is live up to the reputation and live up to the ethos that it's organically built. But it genuinely didn't start like that. You know, it started with me making some stickers and a brand around it for something to do. Then after a little bit of time and trying to put... So I always had this vision that if I was going to make a logo, I wanted it to be like the Globe and Laurel, like the Globe and Laurel in the Marines. Yeah. Every element has a reason behind it.
Yeah.
So when I first designed the cross dagger and fire axe with the GTC and even the name GTC, I wanted it all to represent something. So it was sort of like, and I didn't want it to be too tactical. So obviously, commando dagger, cross-train the fire axe, relatively self-explanatory, Marines, then fire service. Gibraltar Training Company, it was the Gibraltar bit is a not-so-subtle nod back to the Marines. And then the training company bit is like a nod to the British industrial war complex that really contributed to making Great Britain great. You know, the East India Trading Company type things. Also did a lot of bad things, but we don't think about that.
Greatest empire ever.
Yeah, exactly. And it was almost like a throwback to that type thing and everything was built around that. And then as the years went on, I've always said we're community driven. And even one of our taglines in the very early days was like, we're not a clothing company, we sell stickers. That went away relatively quickly. But like people were asking for t-shirts and I was like, you know, this was, we're talking, 2020, 2021 now, you know, the big guys were out there. You had Senators Guild, Fight or Perish were sort of on the way up. HR4K had been around for a while, but I think HMG clothing were around as well. Maybe Reaper 17 had started. So there was quite a few that are still around now.
Yeah.
And there was thousands that were more that were around at the time. And I didn't really want to plan to go down that route. It just sort of happened and people were like, you can do a t-shirt. So we did our first ever pre-order, only ever pre-order. And hopefully I'll never do a pre-order again. The admin behind it was horrendous.
Stress.
It was stressful. It was just the feeling of holding people's money and not delivering in a timely manner. I was like, I'm never doing that again.
Because you've got a good sense of morals there, right? A pre-order is great business.
It is great business, but share
the same ethos of it. You know, we've done a pre-order before and I absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
Like we've got people's money and we know when the stock's going to come, but what if it doesn't? Well, got to give the money back, you know?
Yeah.
Never done it again. There's been a few bits where stuff's en route and we know it's 100% shipping to us. such as our tubs have to come from elsewhere because they're cheaper to make elsewhere. But yeah, it's a horrible feeling. But I think that's a brilliant sign of good morals. You don't want to do that. So
yeah, I think.
How did it go though? Busy?
It went really well. I think we bought 50 t-shirts. I think on the pre-order, we sold 50 in the pre-order and it went really well. It's mainly to sort of like friends, family, you know, people that were from the core or early found us. But it went really well and we sold them and it was like, oh, amazing, this is a thing. But it was like, I just didn't like it. As you say, I didn't like holding the money and not delivering the product. I don't look down on people that do the pre-order model. I fully get it. It makes perfect sense. Most of the time it works for both parties. Good luck to them. And there probably will come a day that GTC will do pre-orders in the future. It is part and parcel of life.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do everything I can to avoid it because it felt horrible. But it went really well.
When you've got a pre-order of, say, stock you have and you're going to release it.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I'm going to do a pre-order because I need the money to then go and order and buy a product. And I think that to me shouts that I'm not confident enough in the product I'm selling. So I'm going to get your money first, then I'll go and do it because I don't want to take any risk. And I think if you're going to put your position in business, because business is to make money though, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a dirty word, but if you're going to do it, and again, speaking for myself here, you should do it with a good product. You should do it morally for the right reasons and fair price and provide something that's decent. Mm-hmm. For people.
Yeah.
So it's.
I think that there's a lot of brands that do the pre-order model, but what they do is then they have overstock. So it's like they buy what they think they're going to sell. Excuse me. It's already on the way. And then they go, right, here's a pre-order so you can get it straight away. That's different. I think that is different. And that's probably where we would go if we were to do it.
Yeah.
But even that model, if I can avoid it and I can use GTC funds to purchase the item, sell the item, store it, much more comfortable with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Mm. What's your favorite product? And you can only have one.
That's a very good question. Does it have to be a specific product? Because we've got 55 different variations of Silkies. Will be 56.
Yes. You've got to pick a product. That's like you saying me pick and I've got to go protein.
Yeah, what flavour?
You've got to do the flavour.
Right.
And it would be jammy biscuit, just saying. Yeah.
Jammy biscuit.
So good. Biscuit buns and jam.
I don't know, really. I think at the moment I'm wearing this gilet quite a lot. So I think we worked quite hard on the gilet. It took us about a year to get right, get to manufacturing, get out and be on the correct standard. And I love a gilet and I'm wearing it quite a lot at the moment. So probably that. But the fact that we did real handmade wool cowboy hats and they sold out in 4 hours, that's also really cool. So
you just said two things.
I did.
You've got a pick. Yeah. You've got which one?
I'm gonna go cowboy hat.
Why aren't you wearing it?
Yeah, it's too expensive to wear.
I would say you can't say because it's sold out.
Yeah, no, I still have one, but I just didn't wear it. No, I would say the cowboy hat because
nice.
I don't know different. Many other brands that could pull off selling, and they're not cheap. They're, you know, we don't make a lot off them. Because they're handmade by a company in the UK, then they're hand customized by another company in the UK, and then we sell them. So it's like, they're not, I think they retail like 165, and I think we make like maybe a tenner off each one. It's like, but it was mainly out of a passion project.
Yeah, that's cool as well.
Can we do it?
That's cool.
Yeah,
it is cool. That is wicked.
I rarely wear it, but we can sell cowboy hats, which is really cool.
Nice. Is there anything else that you wanted to like, products that are coming that you could say about? Anything that's different?
I think this year is one of our biggest faults with GTC is that we grew our variety and our size so quickly. So it's like, we can't keep a lot of our stock in.
Yeah.
You know, especially the silky, especially the flannel shirts, they come in and go so fast. Like we've got incredible support, great community that we're building. And it's so hard to keep up with the current demand. You know, every time we buy more, we batch more, we get them in and they sell out just as fast, if not faster. So I think this year for us is very much, we invested quite a lot at the back end of last year, especially with things like the gilets, our grafter jackets and things. We bulk bought more than we thought we were going to sell. So we can still hold them going into hopefully next year, although... Yeah. Well, this winter, which is looking less and less likely. But do you know what I mean? We tried to get ahead, and we've got our biggest restock of silkies landing any week now that we've ever done, which is
incredibly scary. And I can finally get my next pair.
Yes, you can, hopefully.
Just say I've been waiting long enough.
And that's my point, is like, I would love to do the fun thing of creating new products, exploring new things, and really going out and like stretching the thing. And we've got lots of ideas, but it's like, it wouldn't be true to our community right now that we can't provide for. So really this year is very much about just building stock levels, get as many flannel shirts, as many silkies, as many caps. Like, we've got 30 odd different types of t-shirts and we just can't keep them in stock. We've got awesome designs. Our arts and craft designer, the guy who runs Good Old Boys Club, he's an absolute wizard. I give him an idea, he makes it happen. And it's like, because we've got so many ideas lined up, it's just hard to bring everything in. So we have got a lot of cool stuff. The restocks are the big thing this year. We're moving into the jeans business.
Nice. Which is just really about cool. To ask you, are you ever going to do jeans?
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah. So jeans are really hard. Trousers are really hard in general. Trackies are quite easy to do. There's a lot of white label ones that are great quality. So you can just sort of take that, embroider, change them. You're good to go. Jeans, trousers, tactical trousers, that kind of stuff, really hard to do because there's a million and one different sizes. You know, if you're a 34 waist, 32 leg, but then you can be 34, 30, 34, 28 if you're a midget, 34, 36 if you're a giant. You know, there's so many different combinations. Then within those combinations of sizes, you've also got cuts. Are you going to go straight leg, tapered, slim? You know, the opportunities are endless. So we're talking to a company now who's another British company called Antur, which is what these jeans are. Yeah. And they make like a performance jean. And essentially we're going to be, I'm not sure when this episode's coming out, so they may already be out anyway, but we're going to sell them as almost like a trial to our community. We've got a batch of theirs coming in, which is what I'm wearing now. And I think they're great. They're not going to be for everyone. You know, they're slim, but they're not cut. They're not tight. They've got five-way stretch. They've got reinforced panel in the crutch, but they're still jeans. They're not jeggings. So they're not going to be perfect fit for every person.
Yeah.
Some people like them more slim and be skinny. Like, I've squatted once in my life. I can't wear skinny jeans. And also, as much as I like wearing cowboy boots, like, I wear trainers and Vans more, so I can't have boot cut.
Yeah.
Because I'd just be stepping on them all the time. So it's like, they're not going to be for everyone, but we are releasing them probably before this even comes out. We might even have sold out by that point. And essentially, if that goes well, then we're going to work with them and their designers and come up with like our take on the jeans and create something that like our community would want, but with their kind of expertise and their knowledge of the business already.
Love that. Well, it's probably controversial. Cowboy boots, and you're talking about a boot cut, so the trouser goes over.
Yeah.
But cowboy boots typically have a lot of cool designs on them.
They do, yeah.
Why would you then want to cover that cool design with a trouser? Why can't you tuck it in?
It's the perfect reason why we made Daisy Duke denim silkies, because you can wear your denim silkies and your cowboy boots and you're laughing.
There you go.
I honestly, it doesn't matter. Like, none of us in the UK are real cowboys. If you want to tuck your boots in and show off your gilded ankles, you show off your gilded ankles.
Nice.
I'm not a cowboy. I can't even ride a horse. And I've got cowboy boots. I sell cowboy hats. Loads of our branding is cowboy related. You do you, King.
Yeah. Love that.
Flash those boots.
Love that. I love that. That's wicked. Cowboy boots or cowboy hat?
Well, if you could only have one.
You've got to have one.
Hat.
I love it.
Yeah. Because I wear actually Vans more than anything else anyway, so.
I wear white trainers.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually surprised you're not in grey Under Armour leggings. I didn't, trackies. I didn't realise you owned.
You were right the first time, leggings.
Yeah. They're tight enough to be leggings. So it's me in slim cut jeans.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I've ever seen you not in grey Under Armour.
This is the other trackies. Pair of trousers that I have.
The other ones.
They do have holes in them. If anyone's watching that owns a brand that wants to like donate me clothes. I just don't. It's really bad, isn't it? Like, I've got some clothes and I wear them. I wear combat fuel stuff, and you know, you've sent me a few bits before. I've bought bits off you and off our other friends in the community. And that's enough for me. I'm not really, obviously I have terrible fashion. I would wear this everywhere because it's comfortable and it's warm.
I work in fashion. This is my favorite thing to tell people, right? When people ask, what do I do? I'm like, oh, I work in fashion. And then they look at me and go, you sure? And it's
sure?
Like, I technically work in fashion, but like, I literally wear the same thing. I'm either in Foulravens or now I'm in these jeans or our trackies. And then I wear a hoodie, my gilet, or one of, like, I just live in my own stuff. And I'm just, that's effectively with GCC, every product is either made because the community asks for it,
yeah,
or because I want it. And I usually reflect what the community want, because it's that kind of like, we're all the same sort of person deep down. Okay. And it's like, oh, I haven't really got socks. So we made socks,
yeah,
you know, and I'm like working on thinking about underwear now. But then Danny from In The Dead Ground released underwear, what, last year?
Yeah, they're banging. Brilliant. I've got a few of his pairs of boxes. They're absolutely, yeah, they're really, exactly. You know what? Hands down, not just because you brought them, they are the best boxes I've owned.
They're cracking.
They fit me nice on my tummy, yeah. My gut, we'll call it. They don't ride up. They're not constantly pulling them out. They're good, thick material. They're genuinely exactly. The best boxes I have.
And I'm the same,
Danny,
mate.
Can I have some more, please?
Yeah. Yeah, Danny, can send me some. And it's like, they're cracking. So it's like, I wear everything that we make, essentially. And although I work in fashion, I look like I've been dragged through a bush. but yeah, it's just, I think as well, like the veteran-owned space is in such a good position where people are starting all the time, bringing out stuff that if you're not making it, someone in the veteran-owned community probably is soon, or they are now,
yeah.
You know, I know you're the same. Most of my grooming products, which for me involve soap and soap.
I don't know what we did before he came along. No. With my clipper coat.
And that's
did
it.
We even wash?
I didn't bother. Well, no. I did because I was in the Marines. So
yeah,
you wouldn't have.
Well, that would explain the soap, wouldn't it? Bend it over to reach it.
Yeah, exactly. I go through buckets of that Combat Clipper Company body wash, buckets of it.
Oh, mate, the three in one.
Five dobies a day, mate, me.
Once a week will do me nicely. Yeah. That's really good. What's been the biggest challenge in business so far? You know, now GTC is not a small brand anymore. It's doing pretty well. Please get into numbers or anything, but you know, it's good enough that this is your full-time thing. This is what you do for a living now. What's been the biggest challenge to overcome so far?
Yeah, I think we're very privileged. You know, it's always a hard one. I'll touch on that first. Is like, whether we're small, whether we're big, whatever, I think, like, you know, according to revenue and according to HMRC classification, we're a small business. And it's like, but, you know, we have not one of the biggest social media followings on Instagram, but we've probably got one of the bigger off Instagram communities in terms of our WhatsApp group and our mailing list and things like that. Like, it's almost disproportionate, but, and our you know, our support offline is amazing. So it's sort of, it's so hard when you see the outside image of how well businesses are doing. You know, some businesses have hundreds of thousands of followers and they're not selling anything. Others have one or two and they're incredibly, like, massive businesses, you know? So it's, that's always a weird one for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that GTC is big at all, even in within its own space. You know, it's a very niche world that I live in, and it's a very competitive world. But I would also, and I hate compliments, but I do also recognize that it's got to a position where it's paying my wage. We're managing to reinvest in the business. Moved into the unit last year, and we're at a point where we need that to support the structure of the business, so it is growing. I think the biggest challenge, which I'm sure you'll agree with, is just consistency over time. That's the hardest thing with business, is staying consistent. When it's really easy and it's within 3 to 6 months and it's all going well, everything's selling and you're laughing, it's easy to do. Over the course of 2 to 5 years, or for yourselves, 8, 9 years, it's never steady. It's ups, there's downs, there's stressful, and it's that consistency is the hardest thing. And it comes down to life, really. You know, that was the hardest bit in training as well, in recruit training and Marines, was the consistency over the period of time.
I think I say, like, if you're gonna wish for anything, don't wish for success. Wish for, like, the power to endure, right? Because it's never plain sailing.
Incorrect. You wish for unlimited wishes. Come on, that's route one. That's route one of genie in the bottle, that is.
You, The genie literally says you can't wish for more wishes.
That's a crap genie. That's a Will Smith genie, that is. Don't listen to that one.
That's not a Will Smith genie. That's, oh man, I forgot his name. What's his name? Oh, this is really bad, isn't it?
We're going to be working on genies.
Fraser, man behind the camera. What's the genie called? From Aladdin, the cartoon.
Oh, Robin Williams.
Legend.
Yeah, he is. He is the OG.
He said it, so you can't, yeah. You can't miss
Flubber.
That.
What film Flubber was.
Flubber, oh my God.
It was banging, wasn't it?
Flubber was amazing. Oh, mate, jeez. You'll start getting that one VHS collection soon.
Yeah.
People watching this now are like, what's
VHS
a VHS
anymore?
Oh, somewhere, mate. That's a new business idea, isn't it? Yeah. So I start going back. Like, everyone was putting stuff from like onto like CDs and onto like making it digital. We're going to go to reverse.
Yeah.
All these...
backwards digitalize everything. Back to VHS.
VHS memes.
Yeah, Sega
You
Mega
don't know
Drives
what you're going to get. Where, so you know, you're 6 years old now. A lot of businesses don't make it past the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. And 6 years old is getting good. You're the best part of the way to 10 years. What's next for GTC over the next few years? And where do you see it going?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think the easy and quick answer is no idea. And the more drawn out idea is I really have no idea. It's one of those where I'm really privileged with GTC where none of this was planned. None of it was, I wanted to hit this by this year, that by this year, whatever. It's sort of like we're reacting to the community, we're building, and we're just trying to stay to our, like true to our ethos. You know, our ethos of hard work, integrity, and sacrificing service is just how I operate the business. It's cheesy, it's Chad, but it's just literally that's what we tick off the boxes to be able to do it. And it's about being consistent with that and continuing to grow. It's one of those that, like, I saw something the other day, someone actually sent me a screenshot and someone was talking about the fact that, like, silkies in the core are a thing. And it blew my mind. I was like, sorry, they're a thing. Like, what are you talking about? They're a thing. So making more of our products a thing, yeah. I think that would be really cool.
Nice.
And just over the next, like, few years, it'll be really awesome to rescue some people from jobs they don't want to be doing.
I like that.
So that they can come and live what I'm living now. And we're not far away from being able to do that. We've got some people that work in like contractor based and like part-time things.
Yep.
And if we can get that to being like even just part-time contracts, or like part-time hours or even full-time roles, and then really lean into the fun stuff. Like we've done some really cool trips last year with like our content teams, like Lakota Outdoors, Sword Media, where we go away, Hackle Media is another one as well that we got lined up, where we go away with them and it's like a big social and you go and have a big project. We went down to Black Baron Ranch and you're down there for a night, two nights, down in Cornwall, and it's like they are the best times ever. Most people there are, well, they're there because I paid them to be there, but they're like, you know, it's like buying your own friends.
They could say no though. They didn't
they
have
could
to
say
take
no,
it, yeah,
and right? They didn't actually get paid that much. Most of them helped me out massively. So it's like,
there you go.
It's about doing more of those like cool trips, and we've got an awesome two planned this year. And it's like, if we can be in a position where we can go and do these cool content trips, but not just for me, they can be the job and pay wages for more than a couple of people, it'd be awesome. And it, you know, if we can stay consistent, stay true to our ethos, keep bringing out more like cool products, that's all I can ask for really, and not go out of business.
Do a sombrero.
We've got straw hats.
Bigger.
Bigger straw hats. I've got the hook up now. I can just widen the brim.
Please do.
A sombrero would be sick.
One.
Yeah. You know,
I want it so big that I crash into our rack packing orders.
You know, sombrero is literally just hat in Spanish. So any hat in Spain is a sombrero.
So I can speak Spanish is what you're saying.
I actually don't know if that's true, by the way, as well. So there's probably people that are at home going, what is he on about? No, it's not. But I said it with confidence.
Royal Marines and Infantry.
It. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Clip that. I speak Spanish.
Chorizo.
Chorizo. Doritos.
Wow, we are so cultured.
This is like Duolingo, isn't it? If you listen to this podcast enough, you'll be fluent. In nothing but bullshit.
Oh, man. Oh, no, I can't even say that. about it was going to be something to do with Gibraltar and Spanish, but I will offend people, so I will not. Because
every now and again, we do get messages in Spanish, which translate to Gibraltar will always be Spanish.
Yeah.
Every time, all they get back is a Union Jack, and then they get blocked.
And a cup of tea.
It's my favourite thing.
Talk us through a normal a day. What's a day in the life of PJ?
So I'm really lucky. So I don't really have a set routine, and that's the way I like it. My routine is I've got a bunch of things that I tick off throughout the day. But usually it's wake up, I either take the dog out first, or I'll go for a run with the dog. So I usually like to do something that isn't work straight away. I fell into a trap a little while ago of literally waking up, getting a coffee, starting work. And then before I know it, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and all I've done is stare at my phone and my laptop. So I like to now either go for a run or take dog for a walk first thing. If I'm not doing that, then it is effectively get up, coffee, straight to work. But I work mainly from home. So me and the missus are at home, got the dog, got the cat, work away. And it's essentially the first thing I like to do is respond to social media stuff.
Yeah.
Any customer service, I like to tick those. Sort of the customer service things and responding to people asking questions is what I like to do first, because they're the ones that are keeping the lights on. They're the ones that actually want to be part of the brand. They're the ones that are like, can I get the discount code? Because we do military discount code and services for veterans and everything. So they send us the ID and then we'll send in the code. So it's like, they're the ones that I want to speak to first. It's the guys that have bought something that have got an issue with their order, or, you know, the system's messed up, which it always does. Or, you know, they want to ask a question about sizing and, or they're just engaging with the brand. So I like to respond to the emails, the WhatsApps, the DMs and stuff before anything, because they're the most important people, the people that want to be part of the brand, want to be part of the community. Then move on to prepping the orders, packing the orders. So what I usually do is prep it all at home by like the computer-based side of it, and then the systems talk to the systems, get it all set up. And then usually while that's sort of being done, head to the gym, go and train, come back from the gym, grab some scran, head to the unit. I'm really lucky again, the unit's like 7 minute drive from my house. Bring my dog, is with me all the time. Employee of the month, and Ted, the head of arts and crafts, will be devastated about that. Well, just get better at it, Ted. So yeah, I go to the gym, go to the unit, pack the orders. And then it really depends from there on what's coming in, what's going out. If we haven't got any deliveries, I usually do a little bit of the admin, sort stuff out, take the dog for another walk, get back home. And I'm usually home sort of mid-afternoon, 3, 4-ish.
Yep.
And then that's that time where I sort of get on the mats at JITS, Tuesdays, Thursdays, leave about 5:30, and then I'm there till about 10 and then come home, go to bed. But if I'm not at JITS, then those evenings are where I stop working. And by you know what I mean by stop working, I continue working, but I'm doing it in front of the TV. And it's essentially, that's the time where I'm working on the social media stuff, talking to people. And a lot of the planning does like happens then as well. A lot of ideas will come to me, writing stuff down. A lot of the people that we work with for content, or our designer and stuff, or even our digital marketer, a lot of them have, they're either doing stuff during the day or they're looking after kids during the day. So the evening time is a lot of like communication back and forth. So basically doing that if I'm not on the mats, and then go to bed and start again the next day.
Love it.
Mm.
Wicked.
Yeah.
And just to touch on quickly, because relationships are a hard thing to maintain at the best of times, yet alone being a business owner. But you've been with your partner for a little while now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So we've been together 18 years. Yeah, 18 or 19 in May. So we've been together a long time. We had a little break where she went off to Australia for the first time when she was in uni and I joined the Marines. And then basically when she come back from that, we it was never really an official breakup, never really official start, but then we've sort of been together ever since and we were in communications the whole time anyway.
And it's a piece of advice, or just, how do you make it work? You know, going through being in the military, it's hard. You're always away. You're always busy doing something. And now business, you know, I not get it in the ear a lot, but I'm reminded that relationships take work. You know, for me at the moment, it's very much 90-10. against me. Like, I've got like 10% of my effort that I can put in. You know, when I can, I really do try. But how have you made it work for 18 years?
Yeah, I think there's no simple answer. I think we grew up together. My missus is an absolute rock star. She's also got, although we're completely different people, our values and ethos and things are like almost identical. She's also, beginning of last year now, beginning of 2025, she went full-time for herself as well. So like, she's got that same entrepreneurship mentality type thing. So because we're both in that world, she arguably works harder than me. She's working just as much. And I think the key for us, I would say, would be that we grew up together anyway. We picked the right people. We got really lucky. We picked our person, the right people that complement us in the right way. Hopefully I don't make her too worse, and she definitely makes me better.
So she's your carer?
100% my carer. Yeah, without a doubt. But like, you know, it was sort of, I think we've adapted and changed as the time's gone on. We've grown together. So like, I'm not the same person I was when we met, I was in the Marines, and, you know, I was commuting to Sheffield to see her when she was at uni, that kind of stuff. And I'm definitely not the same person now. But I think the biggest thing that I could say is, don't make your relationship a trade-off. I hear all the time from different people, and if it works for your relationship, please don't take this as me telling you off or giving you advice. You do you.
Just what works for you though, right?
But what works for us is that it's not a transactional relationship. I don't do the washing up because she's cooked. She doesn't do the cooking because I've washing up. She doesn't walk the dog because I'm earning more. She earned more for most of our life. I didn't go and do something else because she's doing that. It's like, I do stuff for her, i.e. if I'm cleaning, cooking, washing up, buying her flowers, because I want her not to have to do that role, or I want her to treat her.
Absolutely.
And she does the exact same thing for me. She does stuff for me because she doesn't want me to do it. And if you're both doing that, everything gets done, but in a positive way. Whereas if you're doing it from a point of view of, oh, well, I'm doing this, so you can do this. Can you do this because I want to do this? Then there's always going to be, well, I'm only doing that because you asked me to. Whereas like, I'm doing something so she doesn't have to, or because I want to do it for her, and she does the exact same way around.
You've met my Rachie a few times, haven't you? I think that's why we work so well, you know? And very much like, I mean, my work life, I don't have a work life balance, I have work.
Your work balance.
Is my work balance.
Work
and
life.
And the Rachel, literally. And you know, it's, she does everything. Sometimes it really is like, she's my carer. But you know, when I get an odd bit of time off and I get, I'll go and do, like, no, I'm cooking. She's a better cook. But I want to do it because I wanted to sit down and just chill and do nothing. I want to do it. I'm doing the washing up. She's like, well, I'm going to have to redo it anyway. I'm like,
yeah, because you're going to do it wrong.
I'm making the effort. And I think that's so important, not making it transactional. I've been in relationships where it's been very much transactional. Well, you bought yourself that, so you should buy me this. That's fair. I'm like, can't this, you know, and the best present, Rachel, ever said I bought her, so cheesy, but was, you know, the meet along Big Victor party rings.
I literally, and when you were stretching your hands out saying meet along, I was like, don't be silly, mate. But yeah, carry on.
Yeah, she's like, you know, because she'd said at the start of our relationship, oh, that's what, you know, I love my party rings and Jaffa cakes. How she looks the way she does on a diet of chocolate and cakes is beyond me, but. Yeah, you know, I think that was super good because, again, like we talked to your parents at the start, divorce and separations of relationships is super common, and it's even more common in the military, you know, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's one of those things that it's just, I don't want to say it's normal, but it's not a surprise that it happens to a military family, is it?
So it's meant to be a professional podcast, and Fraser's over there like coughing his guts up.
I know, it's ridiculous. It's apparently it's cold in here.
It's not cold, is it? Not cold.
I don't know if you can hear it. We'll have to like pause because the cameraman's going to actually die.
He's literally dying. He must have finished his Dr. Pepper. Get that man a Pepsi Max, stat.
That's why. Hopefully it hasn't stopped recording again. Honestly, when you bring Royal Artillery into this,
all goes just, downhill, doesn't it?
It's terrible. Yeah. He's fire service as well.
Yeah,
can
I
you
know.
Believe that?
I know, for honestly, his sins.
Well, because he's bald.
All the best people. All the bald people go to the fire service. It's the only reason I got in, because I'm follically challenged.
I mean, you're not far off, are you? Losing your hair.
He says I'm not far off. I've got a full head of hair and a nice... Well, I haven't got a full beard. He's stuttering again. It's cute.
I can't hear him anyway.
No, I can't. It's because he's so short. He is actually 4'10". Yeah. Like,
you need a mic to sit there.
He needs a mic. We're gonna be. I want to be so egotistical here and be like Combat Fuel now. Mm-hmm. You know, you've bought off the brand for years and
yeah.
Why? What? Why did you pick Combat Fuel? Because you know, sports nutrition is one of them things. I think we've done really, really well. You know, we're against like a huge industry of guys with like a lot of money. We have got no money to make anything that's like fun and cool in terms of advertisement because our products are so good. The margins are so terrible in them. But how did you come across the brand? And you know, you use a lot of our products.
So when I watch the other episodes of other people coming on, they've all said, oh, I don't want to, you know, talk you up, but you know this. I'm just going to be honest. Never used anything from Combat Fuel and I think it's all crap. No.
He's not lying.
Yeah. I think you guys got me in just purely in the veteran thing. I think I don't think I actually saw it until, obviously I was already out in like 2018. So I wasn't on social media. So I don't think I saw it until COVID time.
Yeah.
Maybe 2019, 2020, maybe even 2021. And I think it was literally the veteran owned thing that drew me in. Because it was sort of like, oh, I'm trying to do something veteran owned. Didn't realize there was a veteran owned supplement company.
Yeah.
Saw you guys and was like, oh, I'll give it a go. And then it was just the fact that it worked for me. It was decent products. From the little I know, it worked. And I was like, I'd much rather, obviously, as you know, there's a lot of snake oil salesmen within the fitness industry. I obviously did my PT courses, so I thought I knew a little bit more than maybe average Joe.
Yeah.
And then once you start looking into supplementation, it sort of, you realize I know nothing compared to anyone. But it was sort of like, it was almost like the early days of multivitamins. You know, when multivitamins were like, we don't think it really works, but it might work. But let's be honest, they're not that expensive. If you can afford to take them. They might do something. We're not sure yet. Now, obviously, it's proven that supplementation and they're brilliant. You should all be taking multivitamins and stuff. But like,
if they're good,
obviously you got to do the sources. But it was sort of like, I was in that mode of pretty much everything with supplementation. It was like, I didn't know whether it was good, so I might as well support a veteran-owned company and try it anyway. So it was pretty much just the protein powder, which obviously you were doing early days anyway.
Yeah.
And then as you brought out more products over the years, it was sort of like, oh, they've got a pre-workout now. I'll buy that. Oh, I started taking ZMA religiously years ago. Yeah. When you brought out the first edition of that,
yeah.
I was like, sweet, do that. Yeah. Then you brought out like, what is it? The Ultra, the Max,
yeah.
Which you do.
And that's the only one we do now. Yeah.
Move straight over to that. Creatine. I've always taken creatine for years. Then I've started like the more, have you noticed there's a positive correlation with the more Joe Rogan you listen to, the more creatine you take in your diet. Really weird.
Man's
that.
90% creatine now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I listened for 3 hours on a podcast on the way down here. So I'm going to have to double scoop before I leave. And then I've just, as you've released things, I sort of take them. I do, saying that though, I've just finished the ashwagandha and like, I didn't really feel that it added anything. So I'll probably just not get another
tab. And it's important
that,
to know that like, you know, not every product is for every person. Everyone should use creatine and arguably a good omega-3 fish oil, unless maybe using things like joy. But anyway, creatine, absolutely.
Yep.
So ashwagandha being a stress and cortisol management tool, if you're going to use it and you're absolutely not stressed at all and you've got a pretty good life, it's probably not the product for you. The same as if you've got a really healthy, balanced diet full of fruit and vegetables, you probably don't need a multivitamin. If you sleep well, it's good, you can track it, you know where you're at, you probably don't need a ZMA. Zinc and magnesium, not ZMA because it's a trademark term and ours is better. Elemental forms.
Yeah, I'm still going to say ZMA, but zinc and magnesium.
We all know what it means, don't we? Because it came from there. But yeah, absolutely. And you know, but anyone that does on the ashwagandha's for stress, cortisol management, But taking it dosages of over a gram a day, so ours is 600 milligrams, taking two a day, guaranteed lab tested 99.99% pure, and you should feel the effect straight away. Other than that, it's 7+ days to sort of have the effects come from it. But as you said, absolutely, and I think we pride ourselves on it, as you do. You'd never sell something. If I come to you and say, oh, I want trousers, and you turn around like, why don't you buy a hat? Mm-hmm. Same with supplementation. Like, okay, if you're not stressed, like, don't use that product because it's not the right fit for you.
And I think that's it. I was like, I have reasonable levels of stress, but I think it's what I realized, especially like I've just finished the bottle. I've got like one or two left, which I'll finish first, but it was sort of like, oh, I'll try it. But I realized that my stress levels are just purely correlated to how much mat time I get.
Yeah.
If I'm on the mat a couple of hours a week, I'm chill. I'm not bothered. Like stressful things happen. They come and go. If I can't be on the mat, my stress levels rise. So like, I don't think the ashwagandha doesn't work as much for me. So I was like, I'll try it. Didn't really work. More mat time it is. And therefore all I do now is take more joint instead so I can do more mat time.
Love it. And joints are, yeah, a really good, unique product. But we'll touch on jujitsu quickly because it's massive in a military community. And I think, like you said, with stress, because we've all been trained and whatever trade you are, we are all trained to be soldiers first. I know it sounds cliche and people will argue till the hills come home, but you still, whatever you do, it's always basic training of being a soldier. Mm-hmm. When you're trained to enact extreme violence on another human, once you've left the military, whatever trade you were, you lose that. Like, you just can't go out and be like, by the way, I'm just going to go do a bit of bayonet training and just like shank Harry on the street. I mean, some people, that's what they get into.
Yeah, some people do, yeah.
You know, it's raining really heavy and hopefully this unit doesn't get wet. There's someone outside on exercise.
Oh, no, it's horrendous.
I love that.
There's someone on Woodbury Common right now, like literally swimming in their basher.
We get so distracted, don't we? It's lovely, get so distracted.
It's my ADHD mixes with your autism. I know,
it's terrible, isn't it?
We could be here for 4 hours and we won't have said anything with substance.
No, but I hope you're still watching. I hope you enjoyed it. Why jiu-jitsu for you? Similar thing? That doing violence, but in a controlled way and it's humbling as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few reasons why I went to jiu-jitsu. So I started off my jiu-jitsu journey, if you like, actually with MMA. So I started when I was like 15, 16, just liked UFC, wanted to start it, started those sort of classes in and around Southend. And then I sort of leant away from it when I was like getting ready for the Marines because I didn't want to get injured. And that was very much cross-training type MMA as a base. I did a bit of jiu-jitsu, no-gi, bit of wrestling, bit of everything, bit of striking, and then leant away, joined the Marines. And because I had that very loose bit of like grappling training, it was about the only time when I was in the Marines where I had a slight edge fitness-wise. I was like all the way through training, all the way through my career, really, I was like mid to the bottom of the pack, like very rarely at the end or at the rear, unless I had like injuries, but almost never at the front. And it's like the only time that had a slight edge was climbing ropes and like unarmed combat. And that's literally just because I'd done a tiny bit of jiu-jitsu. Like my jiu-jitsu now is still terrible, but like, you know, it's like when even if you're a 6-month white belt and you've been consistent for 6 months, that new person comes in, it's like playing with a child. The ridiculous amount.
Why do you know playing with a child?
As in
Royal Marines. You're not doing any favors there, mate.
Jimmy Savile. he was an honorary Marine as well. Devastating. But do you know what I mean? It's like that they have no control over their own bodies.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it was sort of like that where I had very limited understanding, but I remember we did this big thing where it's like you're in the gym and you're all in a big like square and the PTI just points to two people, go into the middle, and it's the first one to tap. Like the other one stays, it's like winner stays on, like a Shark Tank type thing. And then the loser has to go climb a rope. And I remember being in there and like the PTIs were like, right, next, after a couple of minutes, right, I'll tap them, bang, they would go out, climb a rope. And it got to the point where five or six, I don't know how many lads were in there, but the PTI just went, fuck off, go climb a rope. And it was like, I didn't know what I was doing. It was just, I had a slight edge. So I think I started my jiu-jitsu journey just from that. I dipped in and out of it throughout the core. When I left the core, it was, I wanted something to focus on that was that humbling thing, that discipline. And that's when I went into like gi jiu-jitsu. Yeah. And then ever since then, you know, what was that, 2017-ish, I've been sort of picking it up, putting it down like consistently from then. And then when I went to, or just before I went to New Zealand actually, or Australia and New Zealand, and just before lockdown, I pretty much made the switch fully over to no gi. And I still train gi twice a week now, but mainly because right before or right after it is no gi. So I think I started just because I liked to learn how to sort of fight. And then I think now it's more about testing myself, staying active, mental therapy. For some reason, it just makes me more chilled out. It's humbling. It's fun. I think the biggest aspect, like people try and equate jiu-jitsu to a lot of different things. Especially like I mentioned earlier, our Lord and Savior, Joe Rogan. And, you know, he goes on about, he's been brilliant for the sport, brought loads of people in. And he talks about all the in-depth benefits and negatives of it, of course. I think for me, it's just the ability to play. Like everyone play fights as a kid, like up until, you know, puberty, really, most girls then don't bother doing it anymore. Guys continue on and play fight pretty much all their lives. Yep. And it's like the ability to play with nothing but just another friend and something else is just so freeing. It makes you feel younger. It just releases all those endorphins of just playing, you know. And it's like there's Joe Rogan again had someone on about the importance of play and like how it can, playing can reduce your chances of dementia and mental health and all this rubbish. But essentially, it's just playing. All you're doing is playing. And it's all those other things as well. It's good for discipline. It's good for humility. It's good for doing hard things. It's, you know, you're doing a combat. You're learning something that in some certain scenarios is a self-defense technique. Not all of it. I play a lot of legs. Yeah. I'm not going to be grabbing someone's heel in a street fight, but do you know what I mean? It's gives you all that, but I think it's just play. It's just fun and it's just chilled.
Love it, man. Before we finish, PJ, any misconceptions about anything that you wanted to address?
Not really. I mean, I'm sure people will watch this and have different perceptions of me, whether it was from times from the core, times in the fire service, or just outside looking in, seeing GTC now. And like, to be honest, it's all good. You know, anything that I did back in the day that may have been a mistake, may have been a good thing, may have been a bad thing, all of it led to who I am today.
Nice.
And I'm very happy with who I am right now. There's a long, long journey to go to be the best person I can be, but like, I don't really feel like I need to dispel any rumors, explain anything. Anyone that knows me will realize I'm an all right guy, you know? And it's like, I don't think I really put myself out there that much anyway. I'm not personally the face of GTC. It stands for itself. So it's like, I don't really have anything to dispel, which is quite nice. But if there is anyone that's watching that's like, oh, well, this happened and you do that. If I did mess up, sorry.
Everyone's messed up.
But I am who I am now, so I'm pretty happy with it. And all those mistakes, all of those right decisions, wrong decisions, they create who you are now. And if you're happy now, then you can't really regret those. Well. But yeah,
absolutely.
No, I haven't got anything. Thanks for having me on, really, brother.
Where can people find you?
Really simple, but you just have to know how to spell the word Gibraltar. There's more R's than you think.
That's quite a long word.
Yeah, it really is. It was very hard for me. Yeah. I don't know why I picked it.
Too many syllables.
That's why I call it GTC.
Yeah.
So Gibraltar Training Company, fully written out on Instagram, or gibraltartrainingco.com on the website. On there, we've got our mailing list. If you're not on Instagram, you can be on the mailing list. You can be on our WhatsApp. We've got two WhatsApp groups. One is called Ascendit Group, and they'll be very happy that I've mentioned this in here. They're a bunch of degenerates. GTC holds no responsibility for any communication, media, or opinions put in the Sendit group. If you like, for some reason, it's got its own folklore now about tow bars, 4x4s, Brokeback Mountain memes. It's pretty wild. But it's a great community space, and you can also ask us questions. So you can jump on there, ask us stuff, chat to other people in the community, or there's an announcement group one, which is just what we put in there. We sometimes do polls and stuff like that, but you can just see what's coming up, or just social media. And then if not, then we are around at a few events, and also we did our soft opening at the HQ up in North Northants. When was it? October, November time?
It November. Was wet, that's all I remember.
It was wet and cold, almost as cold as it is in here. But this spring, summer, we plan to do some more events. So look out and we'll have people over.
BJ Robert, thank you very much for your time coming down.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yep, thank you for everything, man.
Cheers, man.